And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Seven 55 is real with David O'Brien and Eric O'Flaherty is on the air now. Hey, welcome back to 755 is real. I'm David O'Brien, Braves writer for The Athletic, and I'm with my co-host Eric O'Flaherty, former Braves reliever. What's going on, Eric?
What's up, Dave?
Not much, man. Just waiting for these Braves to kind of get some traction and get something going, because it seems like every time they have a really good game, like a kind of a stirring, momentum-building game, you know, where you think, okay, this could be the one that turns – like Saturday, where they give up four runs in the top of the eighth, then they score four runs in the bottom of the eighth and win. You're like, okay, this could be one of those games you look back on and go, this one changed. So when they, what do? They lay an egg the next day after getting a lead. After building a 3-0 lead early, they get a two-run homer from Dansby in the fourth inning, and a game starts at 11:35. You're thinking, I got to win a series from the Padres. This could be big for the Braves. And things just went off the rails midway through that game. And errors, not failing to capitalize on with runners in scoring position, and then in extra innings, doing what the Braves have done too many times the last 2 years, just not seem to – I don't want to say they don't understand how to play extra innings with that runner at second, but they do not utilize that runner at second the way they should, or a lot of teams do. They just have not found the formula yet. You know, whatever they try seems to backfire in extra innings. Like yesterday, Arcia tries to bunt to lead off after the Padres failed to score in the top half of the 10th. You know, you're the home team. It's like, okay, that's it. This game is there for you to win. All you have to do is get in one run, because that team failed to score. And you got a runner at second with no outs. Arcia tries to bunt, puts down a good bunt, they would have won. But he hit it hard right back to the pitcher, and they throw out Contreras at third on a close play. But upon review, it was held up. It was upheld, and they failed to score. And then the Padres just blew it open in the top of the 11th with four runs off of Stevens with another big error. And his second inning of the game for Stevens. He pitched great in the 10th. And then, you know, after the mistake, it came apart for him in the first. You know, they start the 11th with a double. So right there, they get a run in. So you're up against it. And then it just kind of undone. But anyway, point being, every time they seem to take a step forward, the Braves take a step or two back this year. So far, you know, it's early, but that's, you know, you're coming up on a quarter of the season.
Quarter of the season feels like you can start putting weight into things. You know, I mean, it's when it's 1 month or, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, it's kind of hard for me to get too excited or up or down about it. But you get through a quarter of the season, you start being like, all right, we're starting to see who we are. And it doesn't feel like they've found how they're going to win games or who they are. Like, that identity is kind of a little different this year. Right. And I keep thinking of them as, you know, the team before, you know, that always coming back and always doing these things. But it seems like, you know, it's hard to bank on those comeback wins and late wins this year too.
Yeah, they'll get to the quarter point in the season and during the Miami series on this trip that starts tonight. Big trip, because you got the Brewers, who they just took 2 out of 3 from. It's only one of the only two series wins this year. And you know, the Brewers, they just played the Braves last week. So, and they got their good starters going again. The Brewers do. So that's going to be an interesting trip from there. Then you got an off day in Miami, and then you got a series against the Marlins, who are no pushover at all this year with that pitching staff they've got. So you need to have a good trip, because when you're going to pass the quarter point of the season during this trip. And the Mets just had their worst 10-game stretch of the year, 5-5. Braves didn't make up a single, not even a half game on them in that stretch. Braves went 5-5 in that stretch as well over their 10 games.
Well, it's a tough trip because, you know, Milwaukee's a lot tougher to beat in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
You know, it's like bringing them to your place is one thing, but there's just something about that stadium that maybe it's the enormous batter's eye or something, but hitters seem to hit there, you know, and it's definitely a hitter's park. Different environment. It's something about it, man. It's always tough to beat them there. And then Miami's the same way. It's a weird environment. They always, you know, I think guys get a little bit too much of a taste of Miami when you're in Miami. You know, there's a lot of temptation there, whatever reason it is. There's always just weird stuff that happens when you go to Miami, you know,
just an off day.
And if they're playing, with an off day, and that happens a lot, you know, you go into an off day in Miami and everybody's got their family. You spend the whole day at the pool, don't drink any water.
And they're on Key Biscayne on the beach.
On the beach. And the next day you can't figure out why you feel so just exhausted after an off day. You just come in lazy. Yeah, you're not used to that humidity either.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's a tough trip. They'll have to, they need to have a good trip here though.
It's going to be an interesting trip in Milwaukee because they've not named a starter for Tuesday, and all signs point to, now this could change, of course, but all signs point to Spencer Strider getting his first start. And I'm really kind of excited to see what he can do in a start. One of the other options with that was Jackson Stevens being the opener, but that's out after he pitched two innings last night. Jesse Chavez has pitched twice against the Brewers this year and got rocked both times, once with the Cubs, once with the Braves. So I know the Braves are fully aware of that. And I would be shocked if they used him again after so soon after he gave it up in one inning last week against the Brewers. So that all signs point to Stevens, you know, rather than make a move, bring Elder up, that kind of thing. And it's not like Elder has pitched great in his last couple few starts either. So I think they will go with Strider, but we'll see. They haven't announced it yet. Probably won't until after tonight's game in Milwaukee. The other thing, obvious, the one that everybody's eager to see is will Acuna be in the lineup tonight? He's missed four straight games with that string groin, which they initially thought was only going to be one game to hold him out. Then they have an off day and bring him back for the whole series against the Padres. And that didn't happen. It lingered for two more days. So they had an MRI, and the MRI was all good Saturday. That was really good news. It was structurally sound, no problems. So they gave him one more day Sunday to see how he'd feel. And he felt a lot better after treating him all day Sunday. So it kind of depends on when he shows up at the ballpark today. They test it. They see how they ask him how he feels. And if he can play, he's going to play tonight. But if he doesn't, that'll be one of those where they have to consider doing a retroactive IL because you don't want to go shorthanded again. You can do it. You can go shorthand easier now with the DH, obviously, but they're not going to want to do it again after using, you know, a lot of pitchers yesterday and then with the Brewers, you know, tonight. So I'm sure they've got somebody on the taxi squad that if they have to IL him today, they can.
Groins are tricky too because it's hard to do a lot of pretty much anything athletic without using those muscles. I mean, it's like a low back. It all kind of connects your low back, your core muscles, your inner, you know, adductors and everything. They all kind of connect and work together. And any twisting motion, you're firing one of them.
Yeah.
And that's all baseball is. When I was watching him in that, the game that he came up a little lame, I mean, you could see it. He tracked the ball toward the right field line and he just looked like he wasn't really moving right. And that got my attention. And then I saw how he approached the ball when he was going to throw the guy out at home. And he made a great throw. But if you watched how he approached it, his strides were really short, like he was protecting something.
Yeah.
And I thought, shit, something wrong with him. And then the next day when they said, you know, his groin or he was sitting out or whatever it was, I was like, that makes sense. Just based off of how he was moving, like he was guarding something.
Right.
The
good news being it wasn't the knee.
That's what I was worried about. Yeah, you know, I was worried about the knee. And so that's the good news, you know, and when you rehab and get one thing all strong and you're protecting it kind of subconsciously, it's easy to overuse another muscle. But I mean, he's in a tough position because when you come back from being on the DL or the IL for over, you know, almost a year, the last thing you want to do is be hurt again. So you almost get in this position where you're lying to yourself and pretending it's better than it is or not. But mainly you just don't want to deal with it. You know, after you've dealt with a 9-month recovery, whatever it was on his ACL, anything else that comes up, your first thought is it's not, does it hurt? Is it painful? It's, I don't want to deal with this. You know, I don't want to deal with getting this better, sitting out games, doing more rehab. And, you know, your tendency is just to try to ignore it or play through it or take some Tylenol or painkillers, whatever you can to get through it. But that's how another thing kind of spirals into another injury. So, if I'm him, I'd be really careful with it no matter how bad he wants to play.
And that's the other thing. Jeff Schultz wrote a good column today about they're in a situation with him. It reminds me of Bryce Harper at the start of his career, when he was always nicked up because he played so hard. He's always banging into walls. He's always diving. He's always, you know, that the play at first base Bryce Harper had, which was kind of real similar to a couple that Cunha's had, where he's trying to, you know, he's going full tilt, trying to beat
lands
out.
Lands on the bag. Yeah.
Lands on the bag wrong. And Acuna goes across the bag doing a safe sign twice. That's, you know, falls he's kind over. Of tripped when he's done that. But the point being, they play hard all the time. And Harper, it took a few years of being, you know, nicked up, missing 10 games here and there, to kind of not, I don't want to say rein it in, because that implies that you're not playing real hard, but to be a little smarter about
Knowing to go get it.
Yeah. Knowing when to not to try to beat out an infield hit if you know you don't have a chance, or not to try to score from second if there's a real likelihood that you're going to get thrown out and you could get hurt trying to, you know, get around it, you know, sliding head first all the time, banging into walls, you know, going after balls that you really don't have a good chance to catch. It just, it's a lot of little things, and it's a fine line. And I think the only way you get there is by playing a while and learning how you get hurt. But it's not where the team can tell him to rein it in, because then when you try to do that, you get hurt.
Yeah.
You try to avoid injuries.
There's kind of like a fine line of effort level that seems to work, you know, especially in pitching. It's like 85 to 90% effort. You don't lose any velocity. You still hit your spots, and then you can tick up to 100% effort and you might gain 1 mile an hour, you know, and you lose location. And it's the same with, like, say a 10-1 ball game, Acuna hits a slow roller to shortstop. Like, does this single right here, I mean, I know you want to see a guy play hard, but you can still play hard at 90%, 95%, and not go that 100, 110% where you're risking an injury. And these are the plays you're talking about, where it's like unnecessary to go that hard and the risk reward's not really lining up. And that's what he's got to taper in.
Right. And the thing is, you can still hustle.
Yes.
Routine hustle on that play where people watching at home are not pissed off. Because I understand the frustration as a fan. Yeah. Even if your team is getting killed, you want to see your guys hustle.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between hustle and that extra effort where you pull a hamstring because you're just going to maximum, you know. You know, there's a difference between hustling, running out the ball like you always need to do, and that extra effort where you get hurt. You don't have to go from that extra effort to half-assing it, run to first like a pitcher would, you know?
No, that looks like crap.
Yeah,
that looks bad. And you see guys do that, and when you see a guy do that, hit a ground ball to shortstop in an 8-0 game and just, you know, lollygag, just jog real slow all the way to first. I'm out. It looks like you're quitting.
Yeah.
You don't ever want to look like you're quitting. You just, you know, you can't redline it all the time. You have to pick your spots. You know, if it's bottom nine and there's a ball in the gap and you might have to lay out, you know, you do it.
Yeah.
But you can't hit that. Every time you hit that gear, you are risking a little bit of injury, and you don't really pick too much up, maybe a step, but not, you're not covering an extra 30 feet. By going 110%, you're covering an extra foot.
And I also think it's different. It's different. And I don't think there's any denying this. There's a difference between him and an average player, a utility player, a talented but not elite athlete player, busting ass because that's the way they have to play the game in order to play at the major league level. You know, they have to go maximum all the time to try. There's a difference. This guy, for not to use a cliche, but this guy's like a Ferrari, man.
Yep.
They're finely tuned. And you've got to watch out because, like you said, you can't redline a Ferrari all the time. You know, if you're a talented but not elite gifted player, your whole game is going playing all out all the time. You know, you're scrappy. All those, you know, all those words that we use to describe those guys. That's not Ronald Acuna. And, you know, it's not Bryce Harper. And you can't go full tilt all the time, maximum effort, play with your hair on fire, as Snit says, without getting a lot of these little nick injuries like you see, like elite sprinters. You know? Elite sprinters always, you know, they're trained to do one thing only, sprint. But they still get hamstring strains and all that because they're going max effort, trying to set world records, you know. The human body can only take so much. And if you're elite, you're already at the edge of what it can take.
And, you know, learning your body too, you know, because it's kind of like it only takes a little bit of dehydration the days it's mainly the days you feel like when pitchers get hurt are the days they don't have it. you know, and you try to go get it when it's not there. You know, if you're feeling really good that day and the ball's jumping out of your hand, you say, I'm going to try to put an extra two on this one because it's an 0-2 count. It's usually an extra two and it's close to your spot. But when you're down like 4 miles an hour, the ball's just popping out of your hand, like, you know, like it's not even spinning and you're in a jam and you try to go get it. That's when guys get hurt. And it's the same with like a position player. Any day that you feel like I'm moving really bad today, your body's already beat up. You're already drained. You're already worn down. Maybe you're dehydrated, but you're not functioning at that high level that you're used to. And that's the tendency is to try harder. And even for him, you know, if he swings at 90%, he's not losing any power. If he barrels it, it's going to get out. But if he tries to go get it and hit it 550 feet, you know, those are the swings that you tweak something on.
Right.
So it's just kind of learning your body and being able to, but you only learn this with experience, but it's learning what days you can push your body and what days it's like, I better not push it today.
And what you mentioned too is important too. Nutrition, man, when you're a young player, you're not thinking about that stuff. You know, you might listen to the trainers, but you don't listen to them like when you get older and it's important. You know, when you're young, you think you don't need, it doesn't matter, man. You just go. And being hydrated and all that is so important, man. You can strain stuff so easily when you're not.
Yeah. It's just so important to be in tune with your body and how you're feeling. And, you know, it's like you see these guys that have these routines when you're young and they have all these weird exercises they're doing, but they've figured out their tendencies. Like, you know, my right hip gets tight. You see this guy just doing this weird hip exercise. When you're young, why are you doing that?
Yeah.
You know, because you don't need that stuff. But over time, you start to need it and acquire it. And then, you know, you fine tune your maintenance program to where you can feel at that top level every day. But he's not there yet. But that's where it gets slippery is when you can just show up and play and you can just show up and swing as hard as you can. You can show up and run full speed. And it happens. And you can do that until you can't. And then usually the way you find out you can't is with a new injury or a new strain. And then you're like, all right, I got to back off and start being careful.
And like you said, a groin for a speed player, especially, you know, or a pitcher with the lateral movement, the groin is not one of those, like the back is one of those things you can't just play through. You can't just take a pill and play through it or shoot it up, you know? Eric, let's hear from today's sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
He said about playing hard. He talked to Chad Schultz after the game yesterday through the translator. He said, I think the best thing I can do is keep playing the way I play the game. If I try to do anything different, it would just diminish the game and it would diminish the way I play. Snit said they actually talked to Acuña at some point about kind of not, you know, trying just to be smart. And, you know, like what we were just talking about, like ground balls where you don't have a chance to beat them out, or maybe a fly ball you really don't have a chance to get to, you know, play it as a single instead of trying to make that diving catch. He said they talked to him at some point. He said, I think it was last year. He said, you got to be careful because you don't want him to get hurt because he's being careful.
Right.
You got to let him go. You just hope we get him back in there. He said he plays with his hair on fire. He plays the thing hard. He's done a really good job managing since the comeback from the knee injury too. He said he's gotten hot. He's on base a lot. He wants to run, making plays in the outfield. Probably as he gets older and matures, he'll probably need to scale back some of that a little bit because of the wear and tear on his body. At his age, he doesn't know anything but full speed ahead, but God bless him.
Yeah. I mean, hey, it's fun to drive a Ferrari.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if I had Jacob deGrom stuff or I had Acuna's legs, I'd be out doing something with it every day. You know, I just go run. But yeah. it doesn't feel good for me to do those things. And I don't know that there's a bigger rush than him using that full speed and laying out and making a crazy play or throwing somebody out from the warning track. And you're always kind of chasing that feeling. But like I said, I think you got to find that 90%. Yes, throw 101. I'm going to a park and just throw a defense today.
If Syndergaard would throw it, you know, through 95 instead of 101, you know, with every time he throws a fastball, he might not be hurt all the time, but you know.
Or if he decided, you know, being 6'5 and 230 and lean was good enough, and I don't need to be 6'5, 255 and throwing 106, you know.
Exactly.
But it's like your natural instinct as an athlete, especially when you have a gift, is to test the limits of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you kind of got to find those limits and then learn to live right below them.
I thought, again, we're reminded of how different this Kyle Wright is from past years, because he completely got buried and sent down after that horrible start he had last time. What did he do? He came back and had one of his best starts this time, like night and day. 5 days later, I thought he looked really good against a really good lineup yesterday.
He looked great. And you know, I could kind of see the Boston start coming with his start against the Mets. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he battled through that start against the Mets, but he gave up 9 hits. And so back-to-back starts, 9 hits, 3 runs. The next start against Boston, 7 hits.
Mm-hmm. 6 runs, 4 walks.
So, I mean, you're talking almost a 2-whip in back-to-back starts, walks and hits per innings pitched.
Yeah.
I mean, you're allowing double the amount of base runners you want to. And so I was just looking at it like, this is going to be a big start for him, because he looked shaky in one, and then the next one blew up, but he battled through it, which is the big part, is battling through it. And then this next start coming out and just put it behind him and have another good one. You know, I mean, it's like you said, it's really emphasizing the difference in him now of being able to put starts behind him and make adjustments.
He took a one hit shutout to the sixth inning.
Yeah.
I mean, they got a run in the fifth on an infield hit and an error. So he had an unearned run and one hit through 5 innings, and then pitched a perfect sixth. And then he faced 3 batters in the seventh, gave up, he looked gassed to me at that point, but, he said it was just a matter of they took a couple of good swings, faced 4 batters in the seventh. To the second and third, he gave up a first pitch double and a second pitch single, and then they had another error, and then he came out. But until then, he was in complete control. Three of the runs against him, only one was earned. So he goes 6 1/3, 3 hits, 3 runs, 1 earned, 2 walks, 9 strikeouts. I mean, he was really impressive.
Yeah.
Took the ERA back down. It had gone from 1.74 to 3.03 in one start against Boston. Yeah. Got it back down to 2.79 yesterday.
Yeah.
Got back on track, having a really good season. He said it was all a matter of, he had a side session with Kranitz. They noticed that his tempo was really, he had sped things up. And he said it was just an adjustment in his tempo and slowing things down, allowing his arm to catch up. Pitchers understand what that means, but people are like, I don't really get that. But that, you know, he said it was a matter of slowing down his delivery a bit, his tempo, and letting his arm catch up.
I thought, you know, that's kind of a trap you fall into. You know, you buy into, I'm going to be aggressive and I'm going to throw the piss out of it. And this is why you're always making adjustments, because you know, if he's just working on clean mechanics for like, you know, 2 or 3 starts or spring training, whatever it is, and then you're like, all right, I'm going to be aggressive this year, I'm going to fire it away. Mm-hmm. You've already set a base for your timing. So you already have this muscle memory of when I go, when I get my arm up, when my foot's down, that's when I fire. And you've built this so many times that timing's not something you have to think about for 2 weeks, a month, you know, these habits you build. But as he got more and more aggressive and started trying to fire away and just blow guys away, that works initially because your timing's established. But the more you are aggressive and the more you're doing that, it's easy to get into a situation where that aggression's taken over where your mechanics and your timing should be. You know, that should be like the first thought. And that aggression kind of starts being more important to you and you start living off of that.
Right.
And so you get carried away. Now your arm's late and the stuff's not there. And you're thinking, I'm being aggressive. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I've had the same mindset, but you're misfiring a lot. And that's what I saw him do against the Mets. even though he didn't get blown up, he was misfiring a lot and kind of yanking balls and throwing across his body. And that's a timing thing. So then, you know, that's, these are the adjustments you make. He goes into this start, slows down just a hair, and it's not, you know, to the naked eye,
it's not even visible.
I wouldn't be able to tell you on camera what adjustment he made,
right?
But it's a millisecond, you know, it's just, it's like you just wait just a tad longer to go, and all of a sudden everything's pure again and it's going right where you want it to.
Yeah.
And you still have that aggression you've been feeding off and stick with it. And he has a great start. He struck out 9, few walks, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. He said, really just slowing my pace and tempo down a little bit was just kind of going through my mechanics too quick. So the main thing was just kind of slowing that tempo down to give my arm a chance to get back up on time.
Yeah. It's like timing your aggression. You know, I want to be aggressive, but once my arm's up, I'm going to fire aggressively versus just, you know, firing a little too early when your arm's not up.
Yeah.
Then you push the ball or come across it or yank it.
Starting with Jake Cronenworth to end the third inning. He struck out the first four batters in their lineup in order. He had 4 straight strikeouts and 6 out of 7 before Austin Nola's 2-out infield hit in the 5th inning. That was the first hit of the game for the Padres.
When he's been on this year.
Yeah. I mean, he's been their best pitcher when he's been on. Yeah. He's right there with Freed.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got potential to be like, you know, Charlie Morton at his best.
And the other big one, obviously, on the weekend was Charlie Morton's bounce back. I mean, that was huge for the Braves to see, just to see that, okay, because he's old, and to see that he's still got plenty left in the tank and he can still not just be good, but be top of the rotation good against a really good team with the stuff he has, that it's not like it abandoned him. And we said all along, the stuff was still there. It's like maybe a half mile an hour below his average velo. The breaking ball was still sharp, but the spin rate was still as high as ever. It just wasn't moving quite as much, and the command wasn't, and they weren't chasing. Well, he got a lot more chases the other day, and he got 15 swings and misses, which, remember that one game, he didn't get a swing and miss until like his 30th pitch.
Yeah, and it's the same thing with him. And, you know, that's why you have confidence in veteran pitching a lot of times, is because they've been through what Kyle Wright's going through now. And now Kyle Wright has another key. When he feels like he's yanking the ball or pushing it or his timing's off, he can just think, just slow down, you know, just a tad. And sometimes you have this thought where you're like, I'll slow down a tad. And you're like, shit, I got lucky. That's the fix. And then everything's just right where it needs to be again. And for Charlie, you know, I'm sure he's battling aging and getting a little older, this new ball. But for him to find that fix, you know, he's not just stabbing in the dark randomly. He has kind of a lot of things he can go to. So you expect the veterans to find those keys faster.
Yeah.
But I thought that was a huge start for him, just because you could tell he's been off and searching for it for most of the year.
The other thing yesterday, the thing that kind of pointed to two big problems they've had early in the season, which were not expected, were the defense has been shaky. It's not been nearly as sharp as it was last year. They have 18 errors, which is, you know, and that's not a great way to measure defense, obviously, but they have 18 errors in 35 games. It's right in the middle of the majors. Only 4 teams made fewer errors than the Braves last year. They had 71 for the whole year. They had 3 errors Sunday, like I said, by 3 of their defense and the infielders who just, you're guys you don't expect to do that.
Yep.
They were tied before the 3 errors Sunday. They were tied for 18th in defensive runs saved in the majors. The FanGraphs stat that's there, they were with just 2. And right behind them, Tigers, Rangers, Athletics, Royals. So that's not great company there.
Yeah.
The Astros led the majors with 23 defensive runs saved before Saturday. And the Angels were 2nd with 18. And you've seen what those teams are doing.
Yeah. Yeah, defense matters.
Yeah. The other thing is runners in scoring position, and that we've talked about that before, and that's one of those things that can be cyclical, because remember, they weren't good with that last year early in the year either for much of the first half, and it wasn't until they made some trades and some guys got hot. You know, there were guys like Freddie Freeman was hot pretty much the whole year there doing that, but until they got Duvall back in the trade, picked up a couple other guys in trades, you know, and Eddie Rosario got hot, Soler got hot, all these guys got hot, and some other guys started doing it. They weren't very good with runners in scoring position, but they were great at it down the stretch and in the postseason when it mattered. And it was night and day, the difference. And they just haven't done it so far. They've striking out a ton. They've been doing that all year. They have 334 strikeouts, most in the NL. They struck out 12 times in seven innings against Sean Manea. That dude was awesome Saturday, by the way.
Yeah.
And then they struck out 16 times in the first 10 innings yesterday.
It's hard to win like that.
Yeah. I mean, everyone in the lineup struck out at least once. Seven different Braves struck out twice yesterday.
I wasn't able to watch yesterday's game, but I can just tell you. I mean, Kyle struck his fair share out too, but it's really hard. I mean, I think this is something that's just lacking in the game. Is just the situational put the ball in play type of stuff. Because you've been able to rely on the 3-run homer.
Yeah.
You know, up until this year where the ball's not getting out. I mean, I'd have to go back and watch games and recalculate the scores of if these warning track fly balls, what the Braves record is. You know, like there's been balls Ozuna's hit, Olsen's hit that you're like, you know, that's 3 runs right there last year and it's not there. And then the situational hitting doesn't come back to bite you.
Yeah.
That one run you need to squeeze across in the 10th or the extra inning rule, you know, those things don't come back to bite you. But I feel like a lot of teams are going to have to make this adjustment, and the strikeouts are the one thing you have to cut down.
Yeah. And the ball is carrying more, and the offense is ticking up too since they took the deep pitching limit, limited the number of pitchers, the roster. But the offense, that the ball is carrying more, you visible, you can see the difference.
Yeah.
There's balls now that are going 5-10 rows deep like you expect, rather than just coming straight down at the warning track. And it's still kind of hit or miss. You'll be a game where where balls won't, but for the most part, so they're doing something with the balls or the humidors or something.
I think the weather's finally affecting the ball again. So it's actually a factor again.
And if you're looking for signs of encouragement or potential, Olsen yesterday hit two towering fly balls, foul, pulled them right field, that if he had straightened them out just a little bit, would have been on the top of the chop house. One of them would have been, maybe both of them. I mean, these were monster shots. And I asked him about that afterwards, and he said, yeah, it's a good sign when I'm getting elevation on pull side, it's usually a really good sign. So don't be surprised if he hits a rash of home runs coming up here pretty soon. Because that's all I remember from the highlights of him in the last few years when he's been out in Oakland. Long, towering home runs.
Into all those empty seats in right field.
Yeah, like the one he hit off of Folte to break up his no-hitter in the ninth inning that time.
Yep.
So there's the reason those two balls were killed off Musgrove. So, but the first five in the lineup yesterday, Sunday, went that was Demerit filling in for Acuna, Olsen, Riley, Marcell Ozuna, who had a better series, by the way, better homestand, and Ozzie Albies. Those five went 2-for-22 with 3 walks, 9 strikeouts against Joe Musgrove, and 4 relievers, including Nabil Chrismat. I don't know if I'm pronouncing this. That dude he struck out 4 of the 7 batters in the 9th and 10th innings, Nabil Chrismat did.
Mm.
Struck out all 3 batters in the 9th, and then Orcia tried to bunt against him in the 10th. So, but the extra innings, the runners in scoring position thing, they were 0-for-7 yesterday with runners in scoring position. The Padres were 4-for-12. There's a difference in the game right there. Even with discount the errors, it was still runners in scoring position. You could still live with a couple of errors if you got some big hits.
Yeah.
But the Braves, 23rd in the majors with a .224 average with runners in scoring position. Right behind the Texas Rangers and one spot ahead of the Tigers. They have a .635 OPS runners in scoring position, also 23rd. Keep in mind, a year ago, Braves led the majors with an .822 OPS with runners in scoring position. That was just ahead of the Astros, their World Series foe, at .820. So these things aren't coincidence. These things go hand in hand. I mean,
they do.
Hitting with runners in scoring position is important, especially if you don't have just a completely dominant pitching staff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy because, like I said, I feel like the game's kind of taken a turn from all the little stuff mattering, but it's the mundane practice work, just all the stuff the guys do with wash that, you know, a lot of teams, it'd be easy to take a day off here and there, but those things, you know, the games you lose because of defense or little plays or not hitting a sack fly or not getting a bunt down, the end of the season, you could look back and there's always 5 or 10 of them that were decided by something fundamental.
Yeah. And I want to give Riley some benefit of the doubt too. I don't know if it's coincidence or not, but his kind of slump in the field and at the plate, especially first slump of the year, has kind of coincided with having a kid, first kid, you know? It started about a week after he had the kid.
Check how he plays on the road versus at home. That's the thing to look at when you have a kid.
Because, yep.
You know, it's even if your wife's perfect and she's the only one dealing with the baby, she's still getting in and out of bed, waking you up at night. Like you don't sleep the same. And if, you know, like us, we got a baby sleeping in our bedroom right now because we're in a smaller house until we move into our other one. I'm up. I mean, I feel like I haven't slept in 8 months since he was born. And you're dragging it. It's something that, you know, you can't prepare me for. I know after I had a kid, I'm basically out of the league, just one. But you wind up not sleeping the same. You're tired. And then you go on the road and you just get to deadbolt that hotel room and sleep in one day. And you're just like, you feel brand new after a good night's sleep.
Yeah. If you're home for a week and a half, I mean, and you're a hitter and you're not sleeping as much. That's like we were talking about milliseconds earlier. Timing for a hitter, if you can't just go without sleep or with the erratic sleep patterns and it not be important, you know?
You'd be better off doing nothing and eating like shit and just getting sleep than trying your ass off in every other field and losing 2-3 hours of sleep every night. It's like you're still in bed for however long, but the quality of the sleep just goes down so much when you have – a baby screaming at 2 a.m.
Right. And it might be total coincidence, the timing of it. I don't know. Who knows? Who knows? And Austin Riley's certainly not going to blame that, you know.
No, because
he's so happy being a dad, you know. But that's just something to keep an eye on. Let's see what happens when they do go on the road for a week. And like you said, guys, let's take a quick break and then we'll finish up the show.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
With runners in scoring position and two outs this season, those are really big. Runners in scoring position and two outs. The Braves have hit .234 with a .652 OPS. The OPS is 21st in the majors. Last year, the Braves had a majors leading .848 OPS with runners in scoring position and two outs. 22 points ahead of the next best in the majors last year, the Dodgers, .826. So you're talking about basically 200 points difference so far. And it's early. We're almost a quarter of the way in the season, though. And the Braves could get this turned around. And they did a lot of that damage last year after they made the trades and all that.
Yeah.
But that's where they are right now. And if you don't think that's going to have a bottom line effect, you're crazy. I mean, that's 200 points OPS. Their .273 average in those situations was 11 points better than any other team last year. Runners in scoring position, two outs. They were the best in the majors.
It seems like every game is decided on that. You know, you get some reliever on his heels and you got bases loaded, one out, and a guy comes up and pops up.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the mindset of a reliever after that one bad at bat in a big situation. If I'm pitching and I get that infield pop up, bases loaded, one out,
yeah,
I'm already out of it in my head. Now I just have to get any out possible. You know, I mean, it can be a line drive at somebody. It's how your confidence changes when you get through some of those at bats. And it's like so many games get decided by that big at bat, bases loaded. You know, you have to hit in those situations. And it kind of like for the team, you know, once one guy does it,
yeah,
Because that was their identity. That's what we do. And you have that mindset. This is what we do. When we're in these situations, this is when we're at our best. And if this guy doesn't get a hit, the next guy will. If you come up in that situation, bases loaded, one out, I just got to put a good at bat together. You know, I might get some bad luck, but the guy behind me's been getting big knocks too. And this is our team identity. Yep. And it takes success in those situations to start building it. Then the pressure kind of fizzles out and guys start getting knocks.
And they totally feed off each other in those innings where they put together. It's not a coincidence they had one of those huge innings against the Mets where they got like four hits in those situations. They had a 7-run inning against the Mets 2 weeks ago. Then they had that huge inning Saturday night.
Yep.
Against the Padres, same thing. Hits with runners in scoring position. One guy gets one, next guy gets up there. Let's go and keep doing it. And when nobody's doing it, it affects a team, especially a team with a bunch of young guys that haven't really done it year after year after year. You take out Freddie Freeman and, you know.
And he was even if he didn't get a hit in that at bat.
He was the king of it.
It was a freaking battle. You know, if you're a pitcher and you have Freddie in that situation and – you have to throw him like 9 pitches and he's fouling everything you got off. Yeah. And then you get lucky on a hard hit line drive. You know, I mean, it's a grind to get through.
Yeah.
And however many times, you know, it seemed like he always got the big hit, but.
Yeah. How often did he flick his bat and keep alive with it? He could do it like 6-7 pitches in a row. Just stay alive. Just effortlessly.
Frustrating. It's so frustrating. Yeah. You know, you have to have that team mindset and have those at bats. And you're going to come up short sometimes, but if you're having those at bats and making them work, you even feel good about that. But as a pitcher, it's so frustrating when you got the game on the line and you nut your pitch, you make the pitch you need to make, and the guy just spoils it.
Yeah.
And you're like, fuck, you know, and then they spoil it again. And you know, deep down, like eventually I'm going to make a mistake and this guy's going to hit it. And this is kind of who blinks first. But when you have a whole lineup approaching you like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And Freddie was, like Hosmer's the kind of guy that does that, you know.
Yes.
These guys that doesn't show up in the raw numbers a lot of times either. Like,
nope.
Like Freddie's raw numbers compared to say Matt Olson's last year. Matt Olson had as good a season as Freddie, or better, with home runs, you know, RBIs, that kind of thing. Some of the things you don't notice though are what we're just talking about. Those professional at bats. And I'm not saying Olson doesn't have them, because he does, but not like Freddie did. You know, at least not yet. And Freddie was – nobody in the majors was better at those at-bats than Freddie. You know, and the team feeds off of that. They're at the top step watching that Freddie and they're battling this pitcher, wearing him out.
Yeah.
Softening him up for the guy behind him. I mean, these are big things that don't show up when people say, you know, the Braves replaced Freddie with Olson. They'll be all right. They're fine. And Olson's a damn good player. They're maybe their two best first basemen in baseball or close to it. But some things Freddie did – you have not been replaced them yet, and they're hard to replace if you can replace them at all. Ozuna pops out. Ozuna was at third yesterday in the eighth inning. Ozzy pops out, like you were talking about. He's 3-for-18 with a 4.45 OPS. Albies is with runners in scoring position at 2 outs. It's not a lot of at bats, but still 3-for. Adam Duvall, who's been as good as anybody the last few years in the majors in those situations. He's 2-for-12. Each of those guys batting 167 in those spots, runners in scoring position. Worst among Braves regulars. Riley is 5-for-24 with runners in scoring position and 2 outs. 6 strikeouts, 532 OPS.
All guys getting big hits last year.
A year ago, Freddie Freeman led the Braves, ranked 2nd in the majors with a 442 average, 23-for-52. With runners in scoring position and 2 outs. He had a 574 OBP and 1151 OPS and 68 plate appearances in those situations. 574 OBP.
You know what else, too, is when you go through an at-bat with a guy like that with the game on the line and you get a taste of it and they're on deck.
Yeah.
You're pitching to the guy in front of him. Like, I got to get – because I don't want to go in that battle with this guy again. You can feel the guys that you face.
Yeah.
That are extremely comfortable in that situation. And you can feel the guys. I always knew which guys were on deck that I'm like, all right, if I get this guy, the dude on deck, I know him. He's going to try to be a hero. I throw a sinker down away. He's an easy out in this situation. If I face him 5-0,
right,
he's not a good matchup for me. But this situation with his aggression and him trying to be a hero, all I got to do is get the guy in front of him right now. So this is my big at bat. Yeah. And when you have the opposite, you know, when it's Freddie's on deck or whoever's on deck, it, like Chase Utley did that to me. I could get Chase Utley out most of the time, but when it was a big situation, he made me extremely nervous, you know, just because of the quality of bat I knew he was going to put up. But then he had Howard on deck, and Howard could have been batting 500, but I knew all I had to do against him was execute, and he was a good matchup for me.
Yeah.
So I was, if I get through Utley, I'm out of this situation. And that's kind of the mindset of if you've been to Truist Park and you've had to freaking grind against these three, four guys, you're already kind of taking a loss in your head, you know, because you know the odds are against you and how they are in these situations.
Yeah.
And it's crazy that when a team is like, it feels like a team's attacking you. That's how the Phillies used to feel when they were on that run. You felt like when you got in those late big situations, it was the whole team was having these similar at bats and attacking you in this certain way. And on the opposite, when you face the teams that come up and big situation, nothing lets the air out of a stadium more than a guy coming up and swinging first pitch.
Yeah.
Popping up or grounding into a double play. It's like, I'm out of it. And you know who those guys are. So I think, you know, part of that is just the fear of Freddie not being there and having those at-bats can change things too.
Overall, with runners in scoring position last year, not just two out, but all runners in scoring position at-bats, Freddie was fifth in the majors with a .352 average last year, third with a .481 OBP. The OBP was only behind Juan Soto, who's a freak, and hitting savant, and Bryce Harper, who was the MVP, right, last year?
Yep.
Duvall was 11 for 28, .393, with a .1433 OPS with runners in scoring position and two outs last season after being traded to the Braves. And for the year, Duvall hit .368 with a .1260 OPS in those spots, fifth best in the majors. Riley last year hit .346, .967 OPS that tied for 24th in the majors in runner scoring position with two outs last year. Albies hit .286 with a .1033 OPS that was 17th in those situations. So the Braves last year had four of the top 25 in the majors in OPS with runners in scoring position and two outs. Three of the top 11 in the NL.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's...
That's huge.
I mean, it's where so many games are decided. And I think about Freddie too, you know, or anybody that's big in those situations. The guys you don't want to face in those situations as a reliever are the guys that are willing to take their single. That's what made Freddie so tough is who, you know, in your head, I can't just get a free fastball away because he'll just slap it to left and it's two runs.
Right. Through the shift, you know? Over the shortstop if they're not shifting. But he did it all. He hit it where they weren't. Hit where the pitch was thrown, took a walk.
It's an art to perform in those situations, taking what they give you and staying within yourself.
Yeah. And that's why I had this debate this morning. I was online on Twitter with a few people who said, we're talking about the Braves last year, that they weren't a great team. They just got hot at the right time and won it. I'm like, you can't argue with me that the Braves weren't a great team after the trade deadline in August, September, and October. Look at them statistically, whether it's starting pitching, offense, runners in scoring position, bullpen. How were they not a great team? They were a great team, not a good team. They were a great team after the trade deadline. And that was a different team than the team before that. They rebuilt the entire outfield. And that not only defensively, but the lineup entirely changed when you added that four guys. Plus, what you did in the clubhouse, you brought in the Jock Petersons, Eddie Rosario, Soler. And don't forget Voter, man. People might smirk at Vogt, but he had a huge impact in the clubhouse when they bring him over right out of the All-Star break with Jock Peterson. Big impact in the clubhouse. Loosened things up entirely. So, I mean, that was not a good team that got hot. That team after the trade deadline was a great team. And they had the second best regular season. And then they just crewed. They didn't even get taken to seven games in the postseason.
Yeah, that's not getting hot. 3 months is not getting hot at the right time. When the Cardinals did it.
Yeah,
and exactly. Beat us in the wild card, that's getting hot at the right time.
And the Cardinals and the Marlins went in as a wild card and won the World Series. The Braves didn't go in as a wild card. They took control of the division against the Mets. And then they beat the Dodgers with home field advantage the Dodgers had, right? Yeah. And the Astros in a World Series. It's six games in both. So don't give me about they just got hot at the right time. This was a team that came together as a great team down the stretch. But I just gave you those numbers with runners in scoring position for the year. When you have four of the top 25 in the majors, three of the top 17, I mean, that's
– for the year is not a fluke. You know, for a month, for 2 months is –
that's a great offensive
team. You can say what you
want, but, yeah. That's a great offensive team, you know.
And part of that's just the depth, you know, the depth of everybody in the lineup hitting makes it so you have to come see somebody.
Yeah. 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 They feed off each other.
Somebody's going to get that hit.
So, yeah. And then this year, you take out the Tuak qualifier, and here's what the key Braves have done this season with runners in scoring position. Okay. Riley is 6-for-40, 150. Two walks, 11 strikeouts, 484 OPS. Ozuna, 6-for-37, 162, 391 OPS. Albies, 5-for-28, 179. It's got a 485 OPS. Olsen, 6-for-25, albeit with five walks, but he's hitting 240 with an 835 OPS. Those are the lowest four batting averages on the team among Braves with at least 15 plate appearances in those situations. And those are key guys. Duvall was fifth in the majors last year with that 1124 OPS with runners in scoring position. Hit 326 in those spots. He's hitting a healthy 292 with an 887 OPS and 24 bats this year with runners in scoring position. But him and Dansby, who's hitting 364 with runners in scoring position, they're the only Braves regulars hitting above 240 in as many as 20 at-bats in those situations. Darno, team best 9-for-18. Only one strikeout. But after them, after those three, it falls off fast.
Well, and I think if you look at it, you know, there was a cluster of guys together that were hitting with runners in scoring position,
yes,
right? So when you're a pitcher trying to manage this, you know how you want to manipulate an at-bat to get to the guy and the situation you want, where you're not going to pitch around a guy to get to Freddie. You're not going to pitch around
right.
You know, you're not going to pitch around Olsen if the guy behind him's hitting. With the bottom half of this lineup struggling, you get to a point where you're like, you know, Ozzie's coming up and you know he does damage, you know he's a threat. You can afford to pitch him extremely careful and focus on the next guy and go on the next guy after that. It allows you, when there's parts of your lineup that are really struggling, especially two guys in a row, it allows you to manipulate the inning to where you get to this situation you feel confident about, and now you're back to, I just have to make pitches. But when you had Freddie, Ozzie, Riley, and then Duvall, you know, after them, all raking in big situations, you had to face somebody, and you had to see one of the guys. And I think they know that. The hitters know that too. You know, the hitters know, I don't have to do this. The next guy will get him if I don't. So that allows them to be patient and not try to do too much.
And they had guys sprinkled throughout the lineup last year. You had your Rosarios and guys like that at the bottom of the order, in the middle of the bottom of the order.
That's where they were choosing to go see. You know, they were choosing to go see.
The bottom of the order.
They were choosing to see those guys. And then when those guys are coming through and they're firing, it's like you're eventually giving it up and losing the game.
You had so many huge innings last year, multi-run innings, crooked number innings that you're not getting this year because of what you just talked about. You're just not getting those innings. And the result last year was that bullpen was so good, they knew if they just kept it where it was, that offense was going to have most more games than not was going to have a big inning.
Yep.
And this year they can't rely on that offense to produce a big inning, at least not yet.
They will. So, I think they will. But
I think they will too.
You got to get guys firing deeper into that lineup because that was something I really learned as my career went on, was how to manipulate an inning. And you kind of intentionally walk guys, you know.
Yeah.
Mike Morse comes up in a big situation and LaRoche is on deck. I'm like, here you go, Mike. If you want to chase a sinker, you know, 4 or 5 inches off the plate and hit a ground ball, you're welcome to. Otherwise, go stand at first and I'm gonna get LaRoche, you know. And it kind of when you have that confidence as a pitcher, it's incredible how many times guys come up and try to be a hero and give you that free out when you weren't even trying to interact with them. You know, I'm trying to send you to first base and they still want to hit. But when you have a lineup that's weak in that bottom half or a certain guy slumping on deck, you know, it gives the pitchers too many choices in how they want to attack your lineup.
Yeah. And the strikeouts, man, with the runners in scoring position, that they just got to cut those down. Jesus. I mean, even Acuna. Now, granted, he hasn't had a tough time to really get on track yet, but he's struck out in 5 of his 10 at-bats with runners in scoring position. A couple of those were questionable calls looking. Heredia has struck out in 5 of his 8 at-bats in those situations. Very small sample size, but that's a lot of whiffs, man. where you didn't even put the ball in play.
Those are results for me of trying to do too much and not taking what's coming to you. You know, striking out looking is, I wouldn't say trying to do too much, but
right.
When you see a guy come up, bases loaded, I mean, there's nothing more, you know, encouraging as a pitcher or deflating for an offense is some guy just comes up hyper aggressive and you can see it when they get in the box.
Yeah.
This guy's going to try to be a hero. So yeah. You test him with a slider in the dirt and they chase
it. Swing at the first pitch.
Swing at first pitch. You're like, all right, now I'm 0-1. Well, now I got one to burn. Let's throw another one in the dirt. And they chase that. It's like, I got four more pitches to strike this guy out.
Yeah, it's like those at-bats. When those at-bats start with a swing at the first pitch, especially against a guy that just loaded the bases, walked a couple of guys or something, that's when you're like, oh, this ain't going to end well.
It's just not smart baseball. You know, you got to let a lot of these pitchers hang themselves.
Just a quick look. Milwaukee series starts tonight. Atlanta's got a couple of good ones going, man. They got Ian Anderson. These are great pitching matchups. Ian Anderson against Freddie Peralta tonight. And then the series finale Wednesday, Max Fried against Corbin Burns.
I'm going to take the under.
That's going to be a good one. And then in the middle game, they got Adrian Hauser going. He's got a 3.86 ERA. And like I said, it's probably going to get against Spencer Strider, although that could change. They haven't said, just that a lot of signs point to that. So I'm really interested to see how that goes. But going to be a big series. Then they'll have a day off. Then they got Miami coming up. So it's not late. It's not early. We're just kind of in that spot where the Braves need to start making a move, and they know it. And to their credit, they're not saying it's early. They're saying, okay, we need to get going. We need to start winning some games. They know how good the Mets are, you know. And until proven otherwise, these Mets don't look like the Mets of old. So we'll see. I mean, they can have injuries too, and they've got some guys that have gotten blown up lately too. And McGill, you know, I think didn't he get hurt and he got blown up too?
I'm not sure, but you know, the one thing that I know is momentum can swing fast in New York. You know, everything's amplified. You get in a little tailspin in New York. I mean, the thing that scares me is they got Buck to navigate them through it. You know, where I feel like they didn't have somebody to, I don't want to criticize other managers, but
right. You can. They messed it up all the time.
You have to have somebody in New York. You have to have somebody that, If the Mets were playing the way the Braves were playing right now, their season, I could just write it off. Like it's going to be impossible for them to get out of that because of the pressure and you have to have the right leadership. But with Buck running it, you know, it's like
I think Joe they Torrey. Can get
through. Yeah.
Back with the Yankees.
Always calm.
Just a perfect guy to lead that team all those years. Perfect guy. Tyler McGill. Yeah. He landed on the 15-day IL biceps injury.
And he's been good.
Yeah. He's been really good. And that explains.
Cam told me DeGrom's getting another MRI.
I'm telling you, man, they as good as they look. You lose McGill, and if DeGrom doesn't come back, it'd be interesting. The thing they got going for him, though, obviously, besides Scherzer and besides a really good lineup, is that owner with a wallet that he's not going to get somebody this close and be in a position. Where if he spends another $50 million, he feels like he can get the playoffs and win. He'll do it.
Yeah, he will.
This isn't a corporate thing where they have to meet over and talk about this guy. Be like, that's what we need to do. Do it. So that's the thing you got to keep in mind. They will go out and add some big salaries if they need to.
Yeah, they will.
Whereas the Padres are going to try to do it by getting Robinson Cano. he's a shell of the player he once was, but
yeah, he doesn't look fired up to be there.
No, he did not. He was not.
I don't.
he doesn't look too jacked up to be playing in the most beautiful city in America, as they say.
No, I mean, I'm sure it's hard to swallow, you know, being a star in the Yankees, and you get to this point in your career, and you've got
cast
all these
off.
Yeah.
The team you're playing for now, you know, they're paying a minimum salary. The other team paid your money for you to go away.
Yeah, it's a tough spot. I don't know if I'd be feeling great about myself either, but, you know, it's better than winding up on one of these teams that's rebuilding or not.
Oh, yeah. No shit, man. You landed in the right place. Living in San Diego, playing for a contender. I bet he'll be fired up when they play the Mets.
Yeah.
If he's not, then
he's just dead inside.
All right, we'll talk again. We'll do one of the room things during the week at some point, maybe on the off day, and talk to you guys and see what your questions are. I got a feeling what some of them are.
Yep.
All right, 755 is real. Appreciate it, everybody. Thanks.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.